Congratulations to Bobby and Ryan on your medallions and everyone else who picked up chips. I was not planning to speak tonight. I was kind of defaulted into this, hence my attire. These are the best sweatpants I own, though. They got pockets. So they're pretty awesome, so bear with me. But it's an honor to speak for AA anytime I get a chance, and it's probably better because I would have spent the whole day trying to figure out like a whole gratitude speech, you know? So now I actually get to roll with what really happened, you know? So this is kind of cool. But I can honestly say that I am grateful for where I am today. I have to tell you, because the first time, I told this last time, and the first time I came to this meeting, it was at the old place. My sobriety date is January 6, 2008, and it used to be over there. And I was right out of treatment. I think I was like probably 90 days, maybe like 4 or 5 months sober. I was losing my mind. And someone asked me to read how it works. And I had like one of those 6-foot coffees from Starbucks, you know? I was like, you know, it's like... And I don't know why we do that. It's like, okay, we're in AA, we're going to pray, we're going to get relaxed. We come to an AA meeting like, I want coffee, you know, and afterwards we're doing Starbucks. Woo! It's like, I wanted to be relaxed. What happened here, you know? So I was like jumping out my skin, and I'm sitting here, I'm like getting all prepared for this, like how it works. It's like, you've heard it 100 times. It's no big deal. I'm like psyching myself up, and I get up to the podium, and my legs start shaking. And this one, you would see them, but the other one was large, so it hid my legs, thank God. However, when I got sober, I blew up. I was round. I was like, and like, so I started shaking, and then I had like udders, and my boobs were shaking. And I'm like, and I'm freaking out. So I'm trying to get through this whole thing, you know, and I do it. And it looks like I swam there. I'm like drenched, you know. I'm like, and I sit back in my seat. So I have to sit through this meeting. And the first time ever, I was like, why would you do that, God? You know, it's the first time I ever did that in sobriety, you know, and. So afterwards, I have to, like, start asking people, like, you know, did you see that? You know, did you see me up there? It was a mess. You know, they're like, no, you were fine. Didn't see a thing. You know, and you ask the next person, did you see that? They're like, no, you were fine. And Esther, she's not here tonight. I wish she was here. God bless her. And I come up to Esther, and she had introduced me a few times, you know, when I came to that meeting. Rod, my sponsor, we used to come kidnap me from treatment, and we'd come to this meeting. And he'd be like, come on, you're young. And I'm not that young now. All my friends are younger than me. I hate them all. But Esther came up to me, and I was like, Esther, did you see that? I was a mess up there. She goes, that was hilarious. And I was like, oh, my God. I was like, Rob, we got to go now. I was like, I'm never coming back here. You know what I mean? Because I wanted to look good. I wanted you to like me. I didn't really know anyone. And all I could think about was, like, I cannot believe that happened, you know? But anyway, I have to tell that story every chance I get up here because, you know, today it's pretty cool. I can get up here and speak and share my story, and hopefully I don't start shaking. If that happens, so be it, you know? I don't remember my first drink. A lot of people do. I wish I did. I wish I could make like an awesome story up. Like, yeah, I was in a sorority house for 6 days, you know, but can't lie in AA, you know. It's like they take away all the good things. It's like you can't lie. It's like, hey, guess what? You can never drink again. And I was like, oh, my God, this is terrible. These are all the things I'm good at, you know. And I don't know why. It's like I thought I was a good drinker. To this day, I was like, dude, that was awesome. I'll crush you. Like, you know what I mean? It's like, congratulations, you cried, you punched your mom in the eye, you cussed at everyone, you know, all these things. It's like, but I was good. You know, it's ridiculous, you know? And, but I tell you what, I think, I was about to say I was good. I'm dead serious. You know, when I first started drinking, it wasn't just the drink. The drink made me feel good. I did drink for the effect, absolutely, 110%. But, you know, when we're young, it's part of the lively thing. I was hanging out with older people, and I wanted to be part of something, and I wanted them to like me also, just like I did when I came to this meeting for the first time and read how it works, you know. So if it meant jumping off a roof, I'd do it. If it meant drinking that 20 times in a row, I'd do it, absolutely, because I wanted you to like me. And I think I later found out in sobriety was because I didn't have an identity. I felt I had to have an identity. I was this party guy. I would do this. And also, it was fun. Let's get honest. You know, at the beginning, it was fun. You know, towards the end, I cried every day. I was a crier, by the way. You'll hear that. I know you're out there, so you don't have to raise your hand, but we cried, you know. And so basically, I was and I'd have these consequences early on from these drinking. And my consequences, I did not care about myself. You know, alcoholics do not care. We're not afraid of death, you know, all these things. But I did care about the people it affected. And some of it was my parents. Both my parents were school teachers and in the school system I was in, and I was not known to be the guy to hang out with, you know, and my grades were terrible. I ain't going to go into my grades from high school, let me tell you what. And I was present. That's how bad it was. I didn't even skip school. I'd go and still do terrible, you know? But I would be that guy that would never do the work because I was always worried about where am I going to get the next drink. And this is like a week, you know, like the weekend type deal, you know? It's like Tuesday. I'm like, dude, Friday, it's on, you know? And that's all I'd think about, you know? And I remember sitting in the back of class and I'd be like, oh my God, please don't ask for homework, you know, like slouch back. And the one days I did do my homework, I was like, yeah, pick me. I'm like front row. I'm like doing this number. And it's kind of like that with AA. You know, if I don't do the work in AA, I'm not here. I'm not present at work. I'm not the Sean that I think God wants me to be. I can honestly get right back into myself. I can be selfish. I can be depressed. I tend to just isolate. It's just the way I am, you know. So it goes twofold. What I put into the work here in AA, we reap it. There's no doubt about it. And it's so hard to do that work, you know. I mean, if you think about it, these five things, if you take a person who's dying next week of cancer and say, hey, listen, if you take a notebook paper, write this stuff down, read this book, pray, and call me at 5 p.m., you'll be fine. Trust me, it worked for me. They would love that. We're like, oh, I'll think about it, you know. It's ridiculous, you know. And it says here, we do not have, we're undisciplined people, is what it says in the 11th step. And it's true. I was terrible in school. I had the consequences, the drunken public charge at the 18. As soon as I turned 18, I got a drunken public charge, and it wasn't fair. I'll tell you about it. I had surgery, so I was on crutches, and everyone did house parties back in the day, like Ryan would talk about. We didn't, you know, we can't go to bars, you know, but this person would have their house open, so we'd go. The cops came, everyone ran. Well, I can't run. I'm on crutches, you know? So I'm like, and so I'm there, you know? It's like, I'm busted for sure. I'm three sheets to the wind, you know? And, I had just turned 18, so I grew up in a small town where, like, everything made the newspaper, like the headlines, like, local pizzeria sponsors baseball team, stupid stuff, you know? So when mine made the newspaper, and it gave my full name, and this is the actual headline. Shawn Michael, gave my full name, was found frothing at the mouth. Swear to God. And it mentioned soccer. Soccer was a big part of my life. I grew up playing soccer, and that was my identity also. It was the one passion I had that I was good at, aside from drinking, even though I wasn't good at drinking. You know, I loved it, and I think we all grow up with something we love. You know, whatever passion that may be. Maybe it's just flat-out passion for life, you know, and alcohol actually takes that away from me. And what I did was I was fortunate enough to be able to travel through different countries, and I didn't go to college because my grades were crap, I told you that. But I was able to play semi-pro, and wherever I trained or played, I would make them pay for my schooling. I went to 7 different colleges, still haven't finished. Maybe one day. But, you know, that's where I was holding. And basically, I lived this very transient life. And every day, I think it was still just the fun scene to party. You know, that's what a lot of people did in drinking. But I never felt comfortable. And I think what I mean by that is I always wanted something different. You know, and what that means is maybe I was thinking, well, I wanted to go to a 4-year school and just stay there, do this, and do that. Or maybe I could just go into a trade and do this and do that. Something different than what I was doing. I was living like a gypsy. I was traveling all over the place. And it had nothing to do with me wanting something different. But it had everything to do with me not being complete inside. And I later found that out in sobriety. But, you know, soccer would come to an end. At some point, I had a couple ankle surgeries. And they're like, hey, listen, here's the deal. You're in a wheelchair. You're not going to ever play again at a competitive level. You know, and I was like, you know what, this is fine. You know, I was only 22 at the time. I could have still played, but, you know, my disease was like, hey, listen, here's the deal. Find yourself now, Sean, you know? And I think my disease knew that the one thing that I ever loved in life, aside from drinking, which we don't love, I don't have a passion for drinking. You know, I have a passion for soccer, you know? And my disease knew that was gone, I think, and it capitalized on me big time. I blew up really fat. And basically, I was like, well, this is fine. I can get a job. The 9-to-5 thing that I said I always wanted, that's what I'll do, you know? And I was completely depressed. I went through every 9-to-5 job possible, you know, and it has nothing to do with a job. Those jobs were great. You know, it has everything to do with me being inside. And I remember it got pretty bad at one point. I couldn't do my laundry. I was avoiding the phone calls from my parents and friends and family. And that's the selfishness, you know, that comes in that hurts the most, especially when I got sober. I was a terrible friend. I mean, I would steal from you, not your wallet, not your camera. You know, I would steal your friendship. That's exactly what I would do. And it had everything it would do with me not being capable of staying in contact with you or picking up the phone when I needed to or answer the phone when I should have, you know. And That killed me because I wanted to go fix everything as soon as I first got sober. I was like, oh my God, you know, my sponsor was like, no, don't do anything, you know. And but, you know, that went on, and I was just kind of living this non-existent life until my family came down. They kidnapped me. There was like a SWAT team of them. I got three parents. And they came down to Fort Lauderdale from Virginia, and they knocked on my door one day in the morning, and I was crying. You know, they came to give me help. And at the time, I was doing some other things aside from drinking, and they knew it, and I was just a mess. You know, I had lost all the weight I had. I couldn't hold a job. I didn't wash my lower, like, dirty underwear all the time. My neighbor broke into my house one time, cleaned my house, and did my laundry for me because I couldn't do it. You know? It's terrible, and that's what happened. And my parents kidnapped me, and I was like, you know what? I'll just drink a little bit here and there, thinking I'm going to be okay now. I'm not out of this situation. And what I ended up doing was I landed this job as a flight attendant, no pun intended. And I always traveled a lot, so I was like, I love this, you know. So I'm going to do that. And so I got this job, and I thought I was awesome. I had like a suit on, like the jacket Ryan was wearing tonight. He looked really nice. Like, guys, look how dapper he is. And I come up in sweatpants. Damn, you know. And but I felt good about myself, you know. I was like, this is it. I'm going to do okay now. I got this badge that says I can go here. You can't. Sit down, put your seatbelt on. All this power, you know. And at first it was kind of cool because I should feel good about that. It's a new job. It's something to bark on. It's something positive. In 2 weeks, well, that thrill is gone, and my disease has me again, you know. And being a flight attendant is the best job for an alcoholic. You can make your own schedule. And what I mean by that is you can work 10 days a month, and that's what I did. And I didn't have a home. Again, I'm living like a gypsy. I had a crash pad in Atlanta, one in Orlando. Didn't ever stay at either one of them because I couldn't stand being in a room by myself, you know? And that's when it came down to being irritable and discontent. It was an absolute nightmare. That job, most people would kill to have that job. To see the places I've seen to do those things, I cried every single day, you know? And what I was doing was basically running from myself. You know, I would stay in these hotel rooms, not go anywhere. I go to D.C. This truly happened. The whole flight crew went to the Metro Zoo. And people come from all over the world to go to the Metro Zoo in D.C. It's a pretty cool place. They're like, we're going, Sean. You want to go? I said, well, let me call real quick. I call to find out if they're serving alcohol. And they're like, well, actually, sir, 2 weeks ago we stopped selling alcohol. I said, you go ahead. I'll stay here, you know. And what happened was I ended up going downtown, and I got in a fight in some El Salvadorian bar over soccer. And I got a black eye, somehow got home, and had to explain to the flight crew what exactly happened, you know. And those are the things I missed out on. We missed out on so much life. If I could go back through 7 years and think of all the things I missed out on, we get to do all those things when we get sober. I mean, I tell you right now, my life is not extravagant, you know. We go to dinner, we go to movies. That is awesome. I missed that for 10 years, you know. And I have that today. You know, I had the extravagant light before. It means absolutely nothing when I have to drink in the morning, you know. And came with drinking, it was my depression. It was absolute nightmare. I remember it talks about, in To the Wives, it talks about the alcoholic wanting to want to stop. And what I would do is I would find myself in the mirror. I don't know why I always did this, but I guess it was me wanting to want to stop. And crying, and I would just chug my beer or whatever it was just to stop that feeling. You know, and once I start, I lose the power of choice. That's what makes me an alcoholic, you know. And I remember this one particular time, I was in Orlando, and this is a series of events. I'm at this bar, and the girl's like, hey, listen, you know, we're going to have to give me your tab here. I was like, why? I was like, what are you talking about? And I think I'm, like, getting cut off. It's like noon, you know. They're like, no, we're changing shifts. You know, you ever sat through those, like, three shifts? You've been through, like, three bartenders. And, well, this girl walks in, and she sits across from me, and I think I'm, like, God's gift to the planet, you know. I'm, like, she's all dressed nicely, and I'm, like, shooting these dorky looks across the room, you know. I'm three sheets to the wind. I do not look good, I assure you. And some guy walks in a suit and sits next to her, and he gives her a kiss and starts talking. I was like, ooh, guy in a suit, you know. I was like, damn. And then another guy comes in. This is over a period of time, and he sits down next to me, and he starts talking to me, and he gets his food, and he's like, well, I got to go. I was like, what are you doing? He's like, yeah, I got my family at home. I was like, ooh, Family Guy, you know? And I was like, where's all my friends going? Because I had to have someone to talk to. You know, as many times as I would isolate, my brain would go a mile a minute, and it still does today. You know, and that's okay, as long as I don't drink. Well, the third guy came, and I'm talking to him because, I make friends with anyone at this point, whoever will talk to me. And I think we're watching football, and he gets up, and he has to go after a few drinks. It's like overtime. I'm like, dude, what are you leaving? Seriously? You know, he goes, I've had a few drinks. I don't want to drink and drive. It's like, woo, drink and drive. Well, the whole time, everything that happened, I went home and was like, oh my God, that was everything I ever wanted. The ability to stop and not drink and drive. The family that guy had, you know. The girlfriend that would come up and give me a hug. Didn't have any of that, you know. And that's something that I always wanted. There's the normal life, you know. And my girlfriend always wants me to tell me this story, but I won't tell it tonight, but I'll tell another one because she'll yell at me. I was with my family one time. I flew down to see my father, and they asked me to do grace. It's like, well, my family doesn't do grace. I have no idea. But I was like, I'll do it. I'm hammered, you know. So I do this whole thing and make a debacle of it. When they're showing me family pictures of evidently one of our family members, whatever, that I grew up with, this girl. And they're like, look, this is what she looks like now. And I was like, oh, my God, she's amazing. You know, she's like, yeah, they bartend down the street. You want to go meet her? I was like, yeah, let's go. You know, so I'm like, I'm leaving for dinner. I was like, I may not come back tonight. This one looks good to my family. And they're like, Sean, you that's your cousin. And I had no idea. They had to physically stop me from actually going to see my cousin. It was a distant cousin. I had no idea. But nonetheless, you know, those are the places my drinking took me. And fortunately, my drinking would come to a stop. You know, I did have a DUI, but those consequences don't matter. You know, it's all about the emotional bottom when we come in here. There's no line that says, hey, you had to done what I did to get to AA. You don't have to do this to hit your bottom. It's all about how we feel. And I had a car wreck on December 26th of 2007, and I blacked out, and I hit four cars. And it was a big deal. You know, it was on the news, you know, the Bay News 9, all that fun stuff. And it was the best thing that ever happened to me. You know, and what I mean by that is, first of all, the picture was not good. I had urinated on myself when I was blacked out. I had blood all over me. My family was on the side of the road because it's Christmas time. They all happened to be in town for the show, you know. And it was the best thing that ever happened to me because from then on, I was too afraid to drink. You know, that's an alcoholic's dream, to be afraid of a drink. And I was, you know. And if you tell that to a normal person, hey, man, I got in this five-car wreck, injured like eight people, best thing that ever happened to me, they're like, what? You know, and you can do that in AA. We love it when people come in here like, yeah, man, I lost my dog. My mom hates me. I lost my job. I cry in the morning. Like, dude, that is awesome. Yes. You know, I love those guys. You know, those things have to happen to get where I am today. And all those things that happened to me, and I could write down all these bad things on paper, to get what I have today, I'll take it. You know, and what that meant was that I was open to meet God. You know, there's a guy that says, you know, thank God for AA, and I thank AA for God. And I was one of those people that never had prejudice or anything like that towards God. I just did not care. And that brought me to a point of prayer, that gift of desperation that I was in. And I went to treatment, and they said, listen, things are going to be okay. I love those words, you know, and that meant so much to me because I had so much on my plate. And that's exactly what AA does. Hey, listen, it's going to be okay. Here's what we're going to do. We need that direction. I certainly needed it. You know, my mind was going a mile a minute, and someone said, things are going to be okay. I'm going to come back. I'm going to call you. You know, because the next guy tells me that, the next guy tells me that, and that's how this program works. Ryan talked about it, reaching our hands out for others, you know, and it's not just an AA, it's what can I do outside of AA also. There was this time at my work that this new girl we hired, and it was my job to train her, and what I did was I had all these things to do, and I was mad at my boss. I was like, why would you do this? I got so much work to do, I cannot train this girl. You know, the reason I have work I have to do is because we don't have people to work. You know, and my whole job was to train this girl, and I left that day, and I felt absolutely terrible, and I called my sponsor. I was like, Rod, I feel terrible, you know, and we do my inventory, and he was like, you're a jerk. It's like, look how selfish you are. You know, the whole day I just did my work revolved around this poor girl. He goes, here it is, this girl's first day of work in a new place. She's probably scared. She doesn't understand anything, and all you're doing is you're worried about yourself. He's like, no wonder you feel like crap, you know. And he goes, tomorrow, he goes, I want you to go to work, and I want you to go to work for God. And he goes, God has spared you an alcoholic death. You owe him. I was like, went straight through me like a ton of bricks. You know, and I tell that because it's a profound experience, you know. When we're here in AA and someone new comes in, if I'm not there to shake their hand or say hello or make them feel welcome, shame on me. And let me tell you what, there's times I do it. I have my friends here. Thank God I never had friends before I came to AA. You know, I heard someone say when we come in the door, Thanksgiving, you know, this is my family. It's so true. I had plenty of acquaintances growing up. We have it so good, you know. And so basically, you know, I came in the treatment and I was willing to try this out. And let me tell you what, I couldn't pronounce anonymity. I was terrified. I didn't understand. This stuff was weird. All right, I'll be the first one to admit it. This stuff is really weird. I have no idea how it works, but it does not matter. You know what I mean? And I was willing just to say, hey, listen, what do I do next? That's God's will at the beginning. That's it. I don't have to understand this God's will thing, all this stuff. You know, help me out. And that's what I was willing to do because I had that gift of desperation. And fortunately, I became part of something, you know, and thank God it was fun. You know, my sponsor, just like Ryan said, would bring him to these meetings. He would introduce me to people, and I would slowly become part of something that was much greater than, you know, anything I had been part of, you know. And when coming here, my sponsor was like, you're going to sit in the front row, you're going to read these things, and you're going to make yourself present. And that was awkward. It was weird. I had to call these people, you know, and this is all these uncomfortable things we have to go through. Is that hard? Not harder than drinking, you know. And I do the same things that, you know, I did when I came in here that I do today. You know, fortunately, my mind is not 100 miles an hour like it was, you know. I'm not worried if I'm going to have fun. Alcoholics love to have fun, you know. And I thought this was the only thing I know is drinking. You guys do not understand. This is all I know. What am I going to do, you know? And eventually, you know, I became okay with myself and what I was doing. I was around people that doing positive things, my sponsor, my support network, people that I looked up to. You know, I was in the middle of the boat after some time, which is great. We have to be. Not any of us do this thing perfectly. So if the boat's, if I'm not doing so great, I guarantee you God knows the person I'm with is doing okay. He knows better, you know. And that's one of the most beautiful things that I'm grateful for. I tell you what, my parents all the time, they're like, what are you doing? I got so many things to do. I don't know what to do. And, you know, they don't have friends. They have each other. They have a few friends. She's like, you have no idea what it's like. You know, you guys got it so good. And we do, you know. And, yeah, today, I tell you what, you're going to kind of grow up in sobriety, and I used to take a jet to work, and then I lost my license for 5 years, and I had this bicycle I had to ride. My girlfriend and I, we called it the consequence, and I'd be, like, riding my bike to work in this suit with, like, my bike. My pants would get caught in the bike chain. I'm, like, you know, flipping over. People were like, loser! I'm like, I'm a loser, you know? I felt like it, you know? But thank God those days were not every day of the week, you know? I felt good when I woke up on a Tuesday. That's amazing. You know what I mean? And it's only because of AA. Doing these steps were not easy. Absolutely. You know, keep coming back. It's hard. You know, especially when we get this life together. I got a life today that's second to none. So many great things on my plate. The only reason I have those things is because of God and AA. You know? And I have to remember where I'm coming from, basically. I can lose those things in a heartbeat. It talks about the mental blank spots in the book. That scares me to death. I hate hearing about that. Because there's truth to it. You know, people hear it all the time. You know, my sponsor was like, hey, listen, when you walk down the beer aisle, what do you do? I'm like, look the other way. He's like, you're terrible. I was like, what? It's a great answer. You know, he's like, what are you saying? You're powerless over this drink? That you can just look the other way? He's like, I want you to just practice praying. And I was like, oh, my God. This was when I first got sober. Now, every time I go down the beer aisle, it's a knee-jerk reaction that I'm praying. Maybe the chances of me picking up a drink off that aisle, probably not that great today. But it doesn't matter. You know, everything I have working against me is huge. And my only defense against that drink is God. Meetings don't keep me sober. My sponsor does not keep me sober. I need meetings. I need my sponsor. The only thing that keeps me sober is God, you know. And I'm not capable all the time of staying directly connected with God, especially when I'm angry. Hey, go pray. No, it doesn't work that way. You know, this whole AA deal is just one big package. Do I have to talk to my sponsor, talk to a friend? Maybe God works through them. Then I can pray? Absolutely. You know what I mean? I am not capable of sticking close to God by myself. Maybe there's people out there that are or capable of doing that. We've got 5-minute cards. Control freaks. AA, I tell you. You know, but it's so true. And the only thing I don't want to lose today is God. That is it. That's the only thing that makes me feel good. And I've talked about my life as a soccer player, the flight attendant thing, ooh, you know, all this crap. Today, my life, you know what I do? I work a lot, about 55, 60 hours a week. I come home. I spend time with my lovely girlfriend, who I love dearly. We got these two dogs. We go to meetings, and that's it. And that's the best I've ever felt in my life. It's exactly what I wanted. This is what I was chasing my entire life, and I could not find it in a drink, you know? And I tell you what, I'm friends with a lot of you guys, and I know you guys share the same experience. But we got it good, you know? We got it good. And I don't have too much else to say. All I can tell you is that if you're brand new, keep coming back. I promise you it will be okay. Thanks.
I'm Chris. I'm an alcoholic. This is Dr. Bob's last message delivered at the first International Conference of Alcoholics Anonymous at Cleveland, Ohio in 1950. I get a big thrill out of looking over a vast sea of faces like this with a feeling that possibly some small thing I did a number of years ago played an infinitely small part in making this meeting possible. I also get quite a thrill when I think that we all had the same problem. We all did the same things. We all get the same results in proportion to our zeal and enthusiasm and stick-to-itiveness. If you will pardon the interjection of a personal note at this time, let me say that I have been in bed 5 of the last 7 months, and my strength has not returned as I would like. So my remarks of necessity will be brief. But there are two or three things that flashed into my mind in which it would be fitting to lay a little emphasis. One is the simplicity of our program. Let's not louse it up with Freudian complexes and things that are interesting to the scientific mind, but have very little to do with our actual AA work. Our 12 steps, when simmered down to the last resolve, resolve themselves into the world's love and service. We understand what love is and we understand what service is, so let's bear those two things in mind. Let us also remember to guard that erring member of the tongue, and if we must use it, let us use it with kindness and consideration and tolerance. And one more thing, none of us would be here today if somebody hadn't taken the time to explain things to us, to give us a little pat on the back, to take us to a meeting or two, to have done numerous little kind and thoughtful acts on our behalf. So let us never get the degree of smug complacency so that we're not willing to extend or attempt to that help which has been so beneficial to us. To our less unfortunate brothers, thank you very much.